The case is taken under advisement, and the court will proceed to the third case of the day, Keene v. Sears Roebuck. Ms. Coleman.
May it please the court. With respect to the issue of disability, this court has already held that the record contains sufficient evidence for a reasonable jury to conclude that Ms. Keene is disabled. Nothing has changed since the time of this court's ruling in Keene 1. The facts in the record today are exactly the same facts that were in the record the last time this court looked at the case. Indeed, of the last time the court looked at this case, it erroneously believed that it wasn't until after Ms. Keene left Sears that she became unable to walk more than a single block without experiencing complete numbness in her leg. As the record evidence shows, that limitation was already on her at the time she worked for Sears, at the very time at issue in this case. Despite Sears' argument to the contrary, the Supreme Court has not changed the governing law. In Custis, this court has joined the majority trend in recognizing that the EEOC regulations are not in conflict with Toyota. Toyota itself, the Supreme Court in that case says that the Toyota opinion provides no occasion for deciding the level of deference due to the EEOC's regulations. Certainly, if the Supreme Court had believed in Toyota that it was overruling the EEOC's regulations, at the very least, it would have considered deference.
So it's your view then the Supreme Court was just careless when it wrote severely instead of significantly?
Yes. Yes. I hate to use the word careless about the Supreme Court, but essentially, yes. I think that what the court was doing was the opinion in Toyota was directed towards performing the major life activity of performing manual tasks. The Sixth Circuit error, which the Supreme Court was reversing, was to look at the life activity of performing manual tasks only in the context of the manual tasks limited to the job at issue. And the Supreme Court said no, because a major life activity and because substantial limitation has to mean something bigger than that, we have to look beyond the job at issue. We have to look at manual tasks that are relevant to, that are important to somebody's life even outside the workplace. In trying to talk about that and talk about how something has to be very important, not just a little subset of manual tasks, they use the word severely. But there is no indication anywhere in the opinion that in using the word severely, they were attempting to ratchet up the standard from what the EEOC's regulations had already said, interpreting substantially limited to mean significantly restricted.
Well, when you talk about the fact that it didn't raise the standard and you look at some of the core cases from the other circuits, those circuits really didn't address that switch in terminology, did they?
No, most of them didn't, and neither did this court in Custis. However, it has been clear that courts have continued to both cite Toyota and then cite the EEOC regulations without seeing any conflict, which makes sense since the Supreme Court itself said that the Supreme Court itself cited the EEOC regulations, said it was specifically assuming that they were reasonable because neither party had argued otherwise, and then went on to decide the case specifically assuming that the EEOC regulations were reasonable.
Also, their silence could be interpreted as adopting the shift. That is possible in terminology. Those courts didn't deal with it directly.
I think not. Because, again, the Supreme Court certainly would have considered the question of deference if it had intended a substantive shift. But in any event, our position is that regardless of what the standard is, in this case, a reasonable jury certainly could find that Ms. Keene was disabled, whether that means significantly restricted or severely restricted. Walking is a readily understandable activity that everybody engages in. It is something a jury can take a look at the evidence and say, is this even a severe limitation? The evidence is clear that at the time at issue in this case, Ms. Keene could walk one block, and then at that point, her leg became completely numb. And in order to proceed, she would need to either hang onto a cane or hang onto a wall. She had to hold onto something. She also walked with a great deal of fear She testified that every time she had to make the walk from her work site back out to her car, she was terrified that she might not get there. Now, a reasonable jury knows that most people can walk more than one block and without having their leg go numb, and that most people can walk without fear and without holding on to things. It would certainly be a permissible conclusion, whether or not it would be a mandatory conclusion, taking all reasonable inferences in favor of the plaintiffs, which I do not believe the district court did, but certainly it would be a permissible conclusion that Ms. Keene was disabled.
Did Keene ever complain to Sears about the new parking space and ask to swipe in a different manner or request a space closer to the swipe machine?
Those are a number of different questions. She did not ever request to swipe in a different manner because at the time she worked there, there was only one swipe-in location. She testified that there had been some discussion about possibly in the future installing different swipe-in mechanisms, and she was under the impression that meant actually at the cash register so that everybody would be swiping in where they in their actual work location. But that hadn't happened at the time that she was there, so there was nothing to request. In terms of complaining about her parking location, certainly she did try to park closer to her entrance. She parked several times in the merchandise pickup area, which was right next to the swipe-in machine, until she was scolded by a security guard and told never to park there again. She took it upon herself to start parking in the handicapped parking space, but as the record shows, even her supervisor, the one who ultimately gave her the news that Mr. Allen had denied her request to take the shortcut, even that supervisor knew that parking in the handicapped space wasn't going to help her much, if at all, because she would still have to go from the handicapped space, which was outside the intimate apparel department, around the outside of the store to the swipe-in location, and then through the store back to the intimate apparel department. So it wasn't really that much of a savings for her. This takes us to the other issues in the case. The district court's alternative grounds for granting summary judgment were equally flawed. The court did not look at the evidence in the most favorable light to the plaintiffs, and certainly did not make all reasonable inferences in the plaintiffs' favor. With respect to the question of whether Ms. Keene notified Sears that she was disabled and that she needed an accommodation, she provided two doctor's notes that said that she had neuropathy and that she needed a shorter walking distance. And on top of that, she repeatedly told management personnel, she testified repeatedly throughout this 8-month period of time that she was having trouble walking and needed to take the shortcut, and she repeatedly asked for permission to take the shortcut. A reasonable jury could conclude from that certainly Sears knew that she was having trouble and that she needed an accommodation, even knew the specific accommodation that she was seeking. The district court held that it was Ms. Keene who was responsible for the breakdown of the interactive process. A jury might agree with that, but a jury would not have to agree with that. This was an 8-month period of time where Ms. Keene first started complaining and requesting help, and Sears kept putting off her requests. As this court held in Beck, a party who obstructs or delays the interactive process is not acting in good faith, and that is the party who is liable for the breakdown of the interactive process. Sears made no genuine effort to determine how to meet her needs. When it got the note saying that she was requesting permission to walk less, Sears took it upon itself to decide that that meant that she needed fewer hours and that because the holiday season was past, she had been satisfied. Nobody said to her, "Are we right?" Nobody took it upon themselves to make that extra step. By the time Ms. Keene finally quit, a reasonable jury could conclude, may not have to conclude, but certainly could conclude, that the interactive process had already come to a screeching halt because Sears had kept putting her off for so long. 8 months. This was an 8-month period of time. Finally, with respect to the question of whether Sears provided reasonable accommodations, Sears takes credit for permitting Ms. Keene to eat in the intimate apparel storeroom and to take the shortcut. These are the very kinds of accommodations that Sears rescinded. It took away the very supports that she needed. Ms. Keene took it upon herself to eat in the storeroom after permission had been denied. The fact that she took it upon herself to break Sears' rule does not mean that Sears gets credit for giving her an accommodation. The fact that she continued to go through the storeroom after the head of the shoe department said, "Get out of here, this is my department," and I say, "You can't go through here," the fact that she took it upon herself to keep doing it, knowing that Mr. Allen hadn't said yes or no yet, Sears can't get credit for that. What Mr. Allen finally said was no. And then even before saying it, Mr. Allen, after talking to Ms. Keene and knowing that she wanted to go through the storeroom, Mr. Allen posted a guard in front of the door to that storeroom and prevented her from going through. A reasonable jury could infer from this that these are not the actions of an employer trying to reach a reasonable accommodation for an employee. On this record, reasonable people could come to different conclusions about who is at fault where, what the evidence shows, but that is exactly what we have summary judgment denials for. When reasonable people can come to different conclusions, that's when we send cases to the jury, which is what this district court should have done. So for these reasons, the EEOC urges reversal.
Thank you, Ms. Goldman. Ms. Smigelski?
Good morning. If it will please the court. With me at the council table is Grady B. Murdoch, Jr., who also represents Sears. You know, I listened with interest to what the EEOC had to say, and if that was what the record actually reflected, it might be a little bit more persuasive. But it's not. There's a number of points, one of which is the time frame about which we're talking here. On summary judgment, in their summary judgment pleadings before Judge Norgal, the EEOC said that Sears first received notice of the disability or alleged disability of Ms. Keene when it was presented with a December 22nd note from Dr. Hanlon. Now, that is the time at which Sears would have had any duty to offer any kind of reasonable accommodation. When that December note was presented to Sears, it was handed over to a supervisory employee, and Keene made no request whatsoever of that employee. Now, going forward, she talked to Jackie Klisiak, her manager. And Jackie Klisiak said, lest you hear otherwise, I will give you temporary permission to use the shortcut. This was the very, quote-unquote, accommodation that Keene sought. Now, by Keene's testimony, and it is Keene's testimony in this case that precludes summary, or that makes summary judgment so appropriate, by Keene's own testimony, she used that shortcut. And when looking at what Ms. Crumwitty, the shoe manager, said, and looking at what this alleged guard, it wasn't actually a guard, it was a stockroom clerk, said, Ms. Keene puts that time frame in January of 1995. She said that Ms. Crumwitty, after Klisiak had given her permission, told her to get out of the stockroom. And she says that this guard, after Ms. Klisiak gave her permission again, said nobody can go through there. Nonetheless, she didn't go back to Sears and say, hey, wait, you gave me permission to go through here. It's okay. You know, I need to clarify something. She just continued to go through there. And what Sears knew is it gave her permission to go through there. She used that shortcut until the time that she resigned her employment. Now,
well, why should Sears be credited with accommodating her with the shortcut when the accommodation remained unofficial and it left her open to reprimand by store supervisors who were not aware of this her right to access to this area?
Because there was no detriment to her for using the shortcut. She had the right to use it. She was given permission to use it while she was waiting to have clarification about her medical condition presented to Sears. She used that, and although, you know, one store manager reprimanded her, there were no other problems. Now, during this time frame, Sears also was engaging in the interactive process. It asked her to clarify her medical condition. She testified that she was encouraged by what Mr. Allen was doing and what Mr. Allen was asking, because Sears wanted to find out what it could do for her. And during that time period, it also modified her parking arrangements, and it continued to permit her to eat in the storeroom. Now, it's not true that Sears took that away from her, that she was not permitted to eat in the storeroom. She was given that permission sometime in 1994 because she vaguely said, look, I'm having some trouble with my legs. And she used that throughout the time she was employed. There was a general statement by Ms. Klisiak that said, we're having some kind of rodent problem, nobody should eat there. However, Klisiak knew she continued to eat there. In fact, Ms. Keene offered her a cookie. And she was permitted to do that and was observed doing that until the time she quit. She tries to make a distinction between not being able to allowed to eat meals, but she was allowed to eat snacks. But it's not up to the employer to monitor what she is eating. She was allowed to do that until the time that she quit.
Well, even if she continued to eat in the storeroom after the reprimand, why should her, you know, continuing to eat there be credited as an accommodation provided by Sears when Sears was critical of that practice?
Well, it wasn't critical of the practice of Keene eating there. It was just in general, Ms. Klisiak made one statement, and this was, again, before Keene ever asked for an accommodation or presented a note to Sears, that there was a problem with people in general not eating there. And they made that exception to their policy to let Keene actually eat there. And that's why that should be considered an accommodation provided by Sears, assuming arguendo that Keene is disabled as, you know, under the law and covered by the ADA. But what's really key here is that Keene caused the breakdown of this interactive process. By her testimony, she says Mr. Allen denied the official use of the shortcut, and she told Ms. Klisiak at that time, I think there's an alternative, I'll try an alternative. But she didn't. She went home that night, and that night she decided that she was going to resign her employment, which she did, thus precluding Sears any opportunity of further discussions with her. Now, she admits on summary judgment in her affidavit that she could have performed a seated job for Sears. There's also would have been the opportunity for her to move to a different department that would have been closer to the employee entrance to the sales floor. But she didn't give Sears the opportunity to discuss anything with her. All she had done is to quit. Now, going to the other argument, which is, of course, whether or not Keene is even covered by the ADA and whether she's disabled as a matter of law, I think that the district court, within the scope of remand, properly revisited that issue because there was an intervening change in the law in Toyota, where the Toyota court determined that it's a heightened standard that the person must be prevented or severely restricted in a major life activity. Now, in this case, I believe that the undisputed evidence of what she could and could not do reflect that she was not severely disabled in her ability to walk. Now, Ms. Keene and the EEOC says on page 34 of their brief before this court that when she was using her cane, and her condition, of course, has to be examined while she was using her cane as a mitigating measure, she wasn't holding on to walls. She only used that cane for egress and ingress to the store. And she never used that while she was walking her six-hour shifts on the sales floor. She walked around the sales floor. She walked three-quarters of the way across the store to the hosiery department, where she also worked. She walked into the back to get hold items. She walked to the cash register. She walked to other cash registers. During that time, she was not observed having any problems walking. The woman walked with a brief limp the entire time during her employment, and there was no change observed by Sears.
Well, with respect to Toyota, wasn't the court really concerned with clarifying the scope of tasks from which a person must be restricted in order to be considered disabled, and not with tailoring the nature of the restriction itself?
No, I don't think so. I think that the court was rather clear that it should be something that prevents or severely restricts one. And I think that when this court examined a similar issue in Dvorak, it said that the plaintiff in that case would have to show that his arthritis prevents or severely restricts him from walking in a permanent or long-term way.
But there's no court that's adopted your interpretation of that severely as increasing the standard, correct?
Other than the language that has applied in Dvorak. And again, even assuming arguendo that Ms. Keene is considered to be covered by the ADA, it is abundantly clear, based on Keene's own testimony, that Sears engaged in the interactive process, that Sears provided her with accommodations based on the minimal and vague information that she actually provided to it, that she never came back and said, this isn't working, I'm having more problems, I need something different. Any one of the things that she now raises in this lawsuit, it's not the time through litigation for her to come back and say, oh no, I needed something more. It was incumbent upon her at that time, because this information was in her control, what she actually needed, to come back and say, I need something more. But instead, when she thought that the one thing she really wanted, the shortcut, the only thing that she was fixating on, that she would not be able to do that one thing, she decided to quit instead of discussing with Sears any possible alternatives.
So the issue of whether or not seated employment could have come up, should have been initiated by Ms. Keene. Is that Sears' position?
Well, I think that Sears didn't have the opportunity to initiate that because...
Well, I guess my question would... Of course, the record has yet to be developed because we're at a summary judgment stage, but With this distance issue of reaching the automobile versus the site of work, eventual site of work, is it Sears' position that they just believe that she tired, but she could walk? I mean, what?
Well, Sears only knew what she told it,
right,
which was pretty vague, that she was having trouble with her legs and that she wanted to use the shortcut. Ms. Keene, unfortunately, did not explain, you know, this is a specific problem that I'm having. It's really the distance issue.
And the doctor's letters didn't help clarify that?
No. The first one, which came with a tentative diagnosis from Dr. Hanlon, it said avoid prolonged periods of walking in long distances. And they believed that that was taken care of by her having reduced hours. And she never came back and said that it wasn't. And she also never came back and said, when she presented this note, that I need some kind of accommodation or I need some kind of help, you know, accommodation or otherwise. The second note was equally vague. And because Mr. Allen had already modified her parking arrangements and had her parking right outside the entrance to her department.
Even though she had to walk all the way around the building to swipe in and then walk through to get back
to
the apartment.
Well, yeah, the problem is that Keene did not adduce evidence of how long that distance is. Now, she admitted that her parking arrangements and changing the parking arrangements made her walk shorter, but it's her burden, of course, to adduce the evidence to support her case, and she failed to do that and did not adduce evidence of those distances. So all we know is her admission that, in fact, that made her walk shorter. So the court has no further questions. I think that Sears' position is amply reflected in its brief.
Thank you. Ms. Coleman?
And can you specifically address this breakdown of the interactive process and how you get around the problem of her quitting rather than informing Sears as to these other alternatives or these other requests that she wanted to make?
Our position is that for 8 months, Sears knew or should have known but was sticking its head in the sand exactly what was going on. Ms. Keene, Sears says that it hadn't received formal notice of any problem until it got Dr. Hanlon's note in December. Well, this is true. The EEOC agrees that there was no formal notice. But earlier than that, Ms. Keene had started complaining to supervisors that she was having trouble walking and wanted to use the shortcut. She continued to complain to supervisors about that and to say that she needed to use the shortcut. She was having trouble with her legs for 8 months. And during that period of time, Sears received two doctor's notes saying that she needed to limit her walking and mentioning the word neuropathy. Now, Sears is claiming it didn't understand what neuropathy meant and it didn't know what limit walking means. That's not good enough. The interactive accommodation process means both parties have to engage in it. It's not enough for Sears to sit back and say, well, she just didn't tell us everything. Here we are, we would have listened. If they had any questions in their mind, if there was something unclear to them, they had an obligation to ask. As this court has said, an employee cannot be expected to read an employer's mind. Court said that in Baltimore. If Ms. Keene thought that she had raised the problem, she knew she had told Sears that she was having trouble walking and needed this accommodation. Sears never said, but we don't understand. Why this accommodation? Why isn't what we're doing already good enough?
Ms. Coleman, was the focus exclusively on this transit from job site to the parking lot? Or was Sears in any way informed by Ms. Keene as to the stress of just walking on the job during the day?
Ms. Keene testified that when she was at her job site, she was able to do the walking, primarily because her department itself was carpeted, and it was much easier for her to walk in a carpeted area than on a smooth surface, part of why it was hard for her to get through the store the regular route instead of through the shortcut is that she had to walk on shiny floors and dodge counters and dodge customers.
Did she tell that to her employer?
There's no evidence in the record that she told her employer that. There's also no evidence that her employer asked her that. Now, again, we are not saying that summary judgment should go for Ms. Keene and the EEOC right now. What we're saying is that on this record, a reasonable jury could go either way. And in light of that, a jury should have a chance to look at this case. Now, in terms of the note, Sears is now arguing that Ms. Keene gave Dr. Hanlon's note to Ms. Oros, and that was it. She just handed her the note, and it just wasn't good enough the way she did it. There's evidence in the record that Sears itself has testified that the inappropriate, not the only possible way, but an appropriate way for an employee to request an accommodation would be to ask it of her immediate supervisor, who would then have the responsibility to give it to Ms. Klesiak, which, in fact, Ms. Oros did sort of indirectly by leaving it in her desk, and Ms. Klesiak actually eventually found it and read it, and that Ms. Klesiak would then have the responsibility, the obligation, to give it to Mr. Allen, which she did. But it just ended up in a file. Nobody acted on this. Ms. Keene did what she was supposed to do. Now, maybe she didn't say everything exactly clear enough or give all her details at once, but again, it's an interactive accommodation process that we're talking about. And Sears had some obligations here, too. Sears is confusing at the time frame when Ms. Keene first went through the shoe department and was yelled at. That was not the guard that Mr. Allen later posted outside the door preventing her from going in at all. That was the manager of the shoe department. And it was at that point, after the manager of the shoe department yelled at her, that she took it upon herself to keep going through anyway, although Sears, you know, Sears certainly was not accommodating her in the sense that all of its managers knew that she was allowed to go through, at least until there was final permission given one way or the other. She was pretty much sneaking through, relying on the fact that her own supervisor had told her it would be okay, but knowing that the shoe department supervisor had said it's not okay. Sears did not ask her to clarify her medical condition. When she did talk to Mr. Allen and he requested a second doctor's note, Ms. Keene testified that all he said is, I need a note on a Sears form, and then we can figure out what we can do for you. She was heartened by the fact that he said, and then we can figure out what we can do for you. But he never said, the first note is deficient, and this is why it's deficient. I need details about A, B, and C. He didn't ask for more information. He just asked for a Sears form. A reasonable jury could conclude from that yet again, Sears was just putting her off. She testified that her experience of these 8 months was that she felt that nobody was taking her seriously. They just kept putting it off and hoping the issue would go away. And a jury could agree that Sears' behavior is consistent with that conclusion. Sears did not, I've seen that my time is up.
You can conclude your
thank
thought.
You. Sears did not permit Ms. Keene to eat in the storeroom, although she had been given permission by Ms. Klesiak initially. There's evidence that at one point Ms. Klesiak came bursting out of the storeroom and had an impromptu meeting with whoever was around and said, there are rodents in the storeroom and nobody else can eat there. There's going to be no eating permitted in the storeroom. The only people who were there to listen to that speech by Ms. Klesiak were Ms. Keene and a couple of other clerks. To Ms. Keene's knowledge, of the three or four of them who were there, she, Ms. Keene, was the only one who ate in the storeroom. So she could interpret that rescission of permission was directed directly at her, and Ms. Klesiak herself testified that there was no way that she would have understood that she was exempt from this.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Coleman. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.